Aaron, you have a lot of exciting projects happening right now. I want to talk about a film that is coming, but before we get there, your new book that is out, Praying with St. Patrick, Prayers and Devotions Inspired by the Irish Hero of the Faith. This is obviously timely in light of this part of year that we're in right now, but what was it that made you say, hey, I want to dive into this particular topic?
So a few years ago, I stumbled across the writings of St. Patrick. And if you're like one of 33 million other Americans who claims Irish ancestry, then you probably, you know, celebrate St. Patrick's, bump into him, you know, every March 17th. But I mean, growing up, I didn't know if he was any more real than Robin Hood or King Arthur, right? He's just some kind of a leprechaun with a green hat and beer and all this kind of stuff. But then I read these two letters that he wrote and was just blown away by the character and the story of the man that we met there. So just to give you a quick snap of his story, he wasn't Irish. He's actually British or Welsh. He grew up in a Christian home. He talks about his dad and his grandpa who were pastors and deacons and tried to share Christ's love with him. But he said, I'm not really interested in that kind of stuff. Until at age 16, he's kidnapped by Irish pirates and then spent 7 years as a slave in Ireland. And it's in that time when he's a slave that God starts to work in his heart and says he remembers the things he was taught. And his heart is transformed. Now he eventually escapes and makes his way back home. But then God says, now I need you to go and share my love with your former captors. So he gets a commission as a missionary back in, you know, the 400 something AD. And at the time, it was very political and very race-based culture where, you know, the Irish are pagan barbarians, we're civilized, we're Roman, they're bad, we're good. And in his letters, he lays out the case, no, God's love is for everyone. And that is why I'm doing these things. And so he goes back across to the island of Ireland and brings the gospel with him. In the course of his lifetime, you see this transformation take place, that the human trafficking that Patrick was a victim of is eradicated. The human sacrifice that was practiced by the Celtic religion at the time is largely wiped out, and we enter into what scholars, historians call the golden age of saints and scholars in Ireland, where Ireland is sending out missionaries and sending out teachers and building monasteries to invest in local communities all over Ireland and across the rest of the continent of Europe. So I was just blown away by this story and said, man, as a storyteller, I'm interested in this. I'd love to share it with people. And two things more that I'll share that were inspiring to me. There's two prayers that he has in his book, and you'll see these reflected in the book that we wrote as well. But one is he prays that he'd be able to leave a spiritual legacy. He never had kids, but he said, I want people who if are my followers today to continue to do the work that I did. And he saw that prayer answered with a resounding yes. Then he has a second prayer, and he says, I pray that anyone who hears about me, hears my name or what happened in Ireland, wouldn't think of me, but would think of Christ. And that prayer hasn't been answered yet. Because when you hear Patrick, St. Patrick, you think leprechauns and green beer and the Chicago River dyed blue and the White House lit up green, right? So for me, it was, I felt a call and a desire to be a part of answering that prayer, to share the story of what God did in Ireland and to inspire, my kids and my community and anyone else who wants to read this book to learn about what happened and then to learn to pray like he did, to pray for his community, pray for himself, that we could be used in those kinds.
Gosh, there's so much there. You know, one thing that does, and I've actually just now, as an adult having kids and thinking about holidays and what culture does to holidays, right? Or commemoration days like this. You know, when I was a kid, I didn't know any of this story. I just, as an adult, similar to what, you know, you're speaking on, have started to understand the details of this. And you have this incredible, you know, story that you unpack in the book that you just talked about that is so Jesus-centric and faith-centric, and yet culture has just slapped on the green and the beer and the partying. And it's like, it is really interesting how that happens and really unfortunate. And I think it's obviously spiritual, and we could have a whole other conversation about probably why that happens, but people like you coming in, correcting the record. And then the second thing you talked about, prayer, the ability to recognize the importance of prayer, especially right now where we are culturally, there's so much going on. How did this project, I mean, you're a Christian, obviously, but coming into this, working on it, now putting it out, how has it changed your own prayer life?
That's a beautiful question. There's so many seasons of Patrick's life where he's experiencing different things. One of them, the suffering as a slave. I've had seasons of my life of deep suffering as you're going through loss. This is a number of years ago, and I started thinking, working on this project. My father was diagnosed with colon cancer. While I was writing the book, while I signed the contract to launch this, he was in the hospital passing away. And so we enter into this season of writing, going through this grieving process. And I can see Patrick doing that as well. There was a time he writes in his letters when his church was literally attacked and people in his church were killed and kidnapped by someone who professed to be a Christian. He was a businessman, a slave dealer, who went and kidnapped a bunch of Patrick's people. And he's grieving and praying and comforting his people through that. So it was interesting to watch that. And then another, I think for me, I love taking action. I love grabbing projects. I love launching things and doing things. And when God gives you the okay to go, that's my favorite season. But the seasons of waiting are very challenging. And Patrick had a number of those in his life as well. And so we have talk about how he prayed through those seasons of waiting and learning to trust the Lord when he says wait and learning when he says go. And on of different life seasons that Patrick experienced, that he prayed about, that he wrote and put in his book, I've found reflected in my own life, even while we were able to write the letter or to write the book based on his letters. And I think, you know, for me as well, just being able to see the faith of someone from 1500 years ago and see the life of someone from 1500 years ago, how similar they are today. Now, I haven't been kidnapped by Irish pirates, but my struggles and my faith are so shockingly similar. It just really deeply reaffirmed what I believe. And this isn't a cultural trend. You know, as Patrick, he's changed every century to mean something else to somebody else. And today he's just commercialized to no end. But as you look back and peel back the layers, the faith and the life that he lived is exactly what we're called to live to today. And just that brought a great deal of joy and confidence to me and strengthen my personal faith as well.
No, that's incredible. And you know, you are somebody who works in Hollywood. You do pretty much everything. You write books. I mean, it's pretty incredible seeing the different ways you tell stories. Now, let's talk about another project you have that was just announced, A Truly Wonderful Life. This is actually, in my mind, incredibly exciting for a variety of reasons. Tell us a little bit about what this film is going to cover.
Yeah, so we just announced that we're partnering with the Stewart family, Jimmy Stewart's daughter and her family, to bring his life to the big screen. So, you know, as a kid growing up, watching It's a Wonderful Life around Christmas and other movies like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington and even some of his Westerns and just such a great, fun actor, great performances. You know, he's known as, you know, the everyman of America. Just enjoyed it. And then a number of years ago, I stumbled across an article that told a little bit about his backstory. And I just, again, had no idea. The storyteller in me just was so intrigued by this. So he grew up in, you know, small town America with a dad who was a deacon in the Presbyterian church and just praying for his son, raised him, invested him. And all of a sudden, Jimmy winds up making it as an actor, heading off to Hollywood and rising through the ranks to become a huge star, you know, nominated for 5 Oscars, winning the Academy Award. But he had a sense of hollowness in him, even as he's doing these things, that he said, hey, am I fake? Am I a fake movie star? You know, not a real hero. And he sees war clouds on the horizon. This is 1940, 1941. And he says, I want to be something more than just a Tinseltown hero. I want to serve my country, serve my fellow Americans. So he'd been a private pilot and he enlists in the Army Air Corps and rises through those ranks to become a squadron commander, where he's leading thousands of men in bombing runs, you know, to take out Nazi rocket facilities and submarine factories and all these things. Just an incredible story that you'd never imagine for Jimmy Stewart. And some amazing moments for me as he was going. His last time he saw his dad before he took off for Europe, His father gives him a hug, tells him, "I love you," and gives him a letter. Slips it into his uniform pocket, which he finds and opens in the air. And it's a copy of Psalm 91 that's about the Lord's comfort and the Lord being with you. And his dad said, "I have confidence and I will be praying for you the whole time you're away that God will be with you and you'll make it home safely." And he kept that with him in his uniform every mission that he went on. So he survives the war, even as he sees, you know, hundreds of his men shot down. And Jimmy's the one who's writing letters home saying, "You know, Mr. and Mrs., I'm sorry that your son passed away. He was one of my men." So he comes home from the war surviving, but with, you know, what is now known as PTSD. His hair's gray. You know, he's hard of hearing in one ear. And he's not the leading man that he was before. So he has to ask himself, can I make it back in Hollywood? And, you know, his contract's expired. Nobody wants him. So he had one offer to make a movie, and that was Jimmy's War, where he could be a bomber pilot and bomb Nazis on camera. He's like, "Sorry, I can't do that." So he heads back home to small town Pennsylvania, and he gets a call from his old friend who he did Mr. Smith Goes to Washington with, this Catholic filmmaker, Frank Capra. He says, "I've got the perfect part for you, Jimmy. I was struggling too. I was in the war. Nobody wants me, but maybe together we could do this project. It's a great story about a suicidal father at Christmas and this angel who shows up." And he's like, "What? A suicidal Christmas movie?" Or, you know, I'm "No, trust me. Let's just listen to the pitch." So kind of then with his father's encouragement, you know, he says, "You know, I'll do it. I'll take the part." And he winds up making what becomes It's a Wonderful Life. And he says an article he wrote, that moment where he's praying in Martini's bar, that as he was sitting there on set, reflecting on his past, reflecting on all that he'd seen, and, you know, the 16 million American veterans who'd come back and the million Americans who didn't come back and the brokenness that was all around him. As he prayed, he started to weep. It wasn't scripted, but he broke down and started crying. That became a real prayer for him. And from that moment, his journey of healing took off. And so It's a Wonderful Life became a transformative movie for Jimmy, even as it became a transformative and inspirational movie for all Americans, you know, and even to this day that we watch and enjoy. So anyway, long story short, I stumbled across the true story behind it. And I said, I want my kids to be able to know the hero that Jimmy Stewart was and to see what he went through, the sacrifice he made for us, and to see what the powerful prayers and love of a father for their son, the impact of that can make. So that's a story that we're hoping to tell.
That's amazing. And, you know, you're working with his daughter, obviously, and you have her blessing on this. What, you know, what happens next? A lot of times people outside of Hollywood, they read a story, they know, okay, this is a project that they want to make. What is your next step in bringing A Truly Wonderful Life to fruition?
Yeah, so as filmmakers, we have five, I kind of split the years-long process of making a movie into five steps. So step one is development, and that is finding the story, writing the script, bringing the team together, bringing the financing together, and getting you ready to move into production. And that step can take anywhere from months to years. Then you move into pre-production, which is actually the building of the sets, the making of the costumes, and getting everything ready to shoot. And then you have what most people think filmmakers do all the time, which is run around on set with cameras. But on a project like this, that might be 40 days. It might be, a, you know, 6 to 8 weeks of actual production. And then you're into post-production with the editing, the visual effects, and then distribution. But so right now we're at the early stages. So we're talking to studio partners. We have several who are interested in coming along to finance it and to set up the distribution deals and those things. And just really, it's such an important story and such a beloved story that we feel the weight and the honor of telling it and wanting to do justice to the history of it and, you know, to honor Jimmy's legacy and Frank Capra's legacy and all those stories that are coming together. So it's been so fun and such a privilege to get to spend time with Kelly Stewart and hear what her dad, you know, was like. And, you know, was the, just asking questions, was the man he portrayed on camera, how did he compare to the Jimmy that you knew at home? And hearing some of these backstories, and she has copies of a journal that he wrote during the war that it's abruptly ends halfway through the war, that Jimmy didn't have the emotional strength to finish writing it. And so she's sharing these things from us. And then she shared another, sent over a photo that I got emotional as I was looking at this. It's the air record of the 445th Bombing Division that Jimmy was brought home, and it's handwritten accounts of each mission that the 445th went on. And there's the name of all the planes that went out,
wow,
and their destination, and the time to target, and what they were, what their mission was. And then there's asterisks next to some of the plane numbers, and a little line below that says marked asterisk did not return. And so after a mission, Jimmy or whoever was the commander that day would come back and fill out this log. And the picture that I was seeing, those 28, they call them ships, went up 13 asterisks. And as you hear that and you see that and you get to just internalize that pain of what it would be like to do that, the sacrifice and the courage that these men had. And then there's another entry just above it and just below it that they went back and they did it again. And they continued to sacrifice and invest to try to wipe out, the Nazi regime. So just to spend some time soaking in the history of it and soaking in those pieces is the phase that we're in now and preparing to launch in production, when the time is right.
Well, that is incredible, and it's something for people to be praying for your team as you try to bring a truly wonderful life to life and tell that story behind the story. And I want to encourage people to head out and grab Praying with St. Patrick. It's another powerful project, and we'll be having you back as A Truly Wonderful Life develops. Would love to have you back to talk more about it.
I can't wait. There's so many fun steps ahead. Who's going to play Jimmy Stewart? Where are we going to shoot the movie? And lots of fun things that we're praying for. Yes, would love people to join us on a prayer journey with this as well. Thank you so much.